Anyone who's even modestly competent at Trivial Pursuit knows who invented the airplane, Orville and Wilbur Wright. But some historians believe the Wright brothers soon became more of an obstacle than an aid to further progress in aviation, as they tried to prevent anyone else from following their example. NPR's Dan Charles has the story that some call a cautionary tale for technological pioneers today.
Step inside the front doors of the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., and the first thing you see, straight ahead and above you, is the double-winged aircraft that once rose from the dunes of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, in 1903.
It should be the first thing you see. It is the world's first airplane.
Tom Crouch is a historian at the museum. He's also written an authoritative biography of the Wright brothers.
It's the first airplane that was capable of taking off under its own power, staying in the air in sustained flight, and operating completely under the control of the pilot. No other machine in the entire world, other than a Wright machine, was going to be able to do that for the next 5 or 6 years.
But what visitors to this museum don't realize is the Wright brothers didn't let anyone but a few friends see their airplanes for the next 5 years. They worried that competitors would steal their secrets before they had a chance to lock up lucrative contracts for their invention. So the Wright brothers ended up not making the first public flight in America. To see that airplane, you have to travel to the Finger Lakes region of New York, to the tiny village of Hammondsport and the Glenn Curtiss Museum. There, associate curator Chris Geiselman is happy to show off a flying machine called the Junebug.
It's basically a structure of bamboo, wood, and wire with a heavy engine in the rear and propeller, and it doesn't look like it would get off the ground.
Yet it did fly for more than a mile on the 4th of July, 1908, with thousands of people watching and cheering. At the controls was a man who would become the Wright brothers' great rival, a bicycle mechanic, motorcycle racer, and all-round speed demon named Glenn Hammond Curtiss.
Curtiss is the local boy, the local hero, and we think he's tremendously important in the story of early aviation.
Few people outside of Hammondsport have ever heard of Glenn Curtiss. Writer Seth Shulman says he was stunned to find out how much Curtiss accomplished.
He was the first to sell an airplane commercially in the United States. His is the name on the first pilot license, not the Wright brothers. And then he was the first to fly from one city to another, which was a remarkable accomplishment. And the more I found out, it was, how is it that we don't remember this guy more?
Shulman now is trying to revive Curtiss's reputation with a new book about him called Unlocking the Sky. He chose that title, Shulman says, because the Wright brothers were trying to lock up the sky, claiming the airplane as their exclusive property.
This is a classic tale that pits the virtues of open shared access to innovation against the driving economic pressures for monopoly ownership.
For Shulman, Glenn Curtiss is a hero, a genius inventor who, unlike many inventors, also was a master of collaboration with others.
Everyone just about who knew him remembers him fondly, and he had this incredible capacity to work in teams in such a way that he wasn't the sort of megalomaniac of an Edison, say, but actually brought people in on the team and made everybody feel like they were working together. And that's something that just sets him so apart from the Wright brothers.
Shulman says the Wright brothers had a harsh and selfish side that most of us never hear about.
We just sort of remember half of their story. We remember the earnest young bicycle builders at Kitty Hawk, but then we forget, I think, the way in which they turned into would-be monopolists that alienated virtually everyone in the industry.
It started with Wilbur and Orville Wright's obsessive secrecy, Shulman says. They soaked up information from a host of people who also were experimenting with flying machines, but they kept detailed information about their own successes to themselves. A few years after Glenn Curtiss's flight, he started building aircraft that were superior to those of the Wright brothers, and Orville Wright responded with lawsuits claiming that Curtiss was violating a Wright brothers patent, a far-reaching patent that covered practically any system for controlling an aircraft in flight. The patent battle went on for years. Shulman says it became an ugly personal feud. And he says the Wrights weren't only after royalties.
They were after gaining a monopoly on the airplane, and what they wanted to do is shut his operation down.
Now, this probably is the minority view of the Wright brothers. They have many defenders, among them Tom Crouch from the National Air and Space Museum. Crouch says Wilbur and Orville Wright had a clear legal right to shut Curtis out of the business. The courts consistently upheld their patent, and they also were trying to defend their place in history.
I think they said to themselves, well, we did this, and it was really something, and we deserve some recompense for what we did. And I think it was just that simple.
Yet even Tom Crouch says the Wright brothers probably hurt themselves by concentrating so much on their patents. They could have secured their place in history more quickly, and they might even have made more money if they'd shown the world right away what they'd done, or if they'd collaborated with Curtis rather than chosen to fight him. Orville Wright's battle to defend his patent also may have hurt the country. Some historians think it's part of the reason why American aircraft companies fell far behind their European competitors in the years leading up to World War I. When that war broke out, the U.S. government decided that the patent litigation had to end. It paid off both companies and ordered them to get on with building airplanes. For the next 50 years, American aircraft makers weren't allowed to claim exclusive rights to their inventions, yet their technology soon led the world. Richard Nelson, director of a research program on science and technology policy at Columbia University, says that history challenges some widely held assumptions about the value of patents.
The popular wisdom that strong patents always facilitate and spur technical progress may not be quite right.
Some of the 20th century's most successful high-tech companies, Nelson says, didn't bother to enforce their own patents. Entire industries agreed informally not to sue, but to share their technology.
This was very much the case in the development of the modern computer in the 1950s and 1960s. It was the case for a long, long period of time regarding semiconductors.
But that era of cooperation seems to have ended. The agreement among semiconductor manufacturers broke down some years ago, unleashing a flood of patent litigation. And biotechnology companies are currently trying to patent genes by the thousands, along with every tool used to discover those genes. Sorting out all the competing claims, according to some analysts, will be messy and expensive. Richard Nelson says those industries should be reminded of the Wright brothers' experience. Technical progress depends on creativity and invention, but apparently it also depends on sharing. Dan Charles, NPR News, Hammondsport, New York.